Welcome to intermission. Yeah, intermission.
So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the new.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable, Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Yeah, they were good. Yeah. I was pretty impressed with Robert Anthony on the show, and
well, you worked
Josh,
with Robbie at IWA, right?
Yes. Yeah. When I did ring announcing over there.
Where is he? You said he's moving. Where is he? Where is he located? Or what vicinity?
He's actually around Michigan.
Okay, because I've heard. You know, the funny thing is, I've talked to a couple guys here, and one guy said he thought he lived in Cleveland. About somebody else. Excuse me, said Michigan, and
he's around Michigan.
Does he live with Jimmy Jacobs, or did live with Jimmy Jacobs?
He used to be Jimmy Jacobs' roommate, yes.
Oh, okay.
But he is moving with his girlfriend right now.
All right. Well,
but
the love.
Yes, the love. I think people were getting him confused with Josh Prohibition. Have you ever heard of him?
I've heard that name. I've never seen him, although
he's,
that name came up last night, too, where somebody worked on a show with him at some insane wrestling or... Crazy, I don't know.
Insanity
there's,
Pro?
There's more goofy names in the independent scene than I can keep track of. But anyway, that was the highlight for me of the show, and I had made the trip with Rosie. We got home at 4 a.m. There's no way to get to Doc's hometown that has more than two lanes of highway. So I told Rosie on the way down he was getting a taste of how I travel when I started in the business in 1960. Because, the interstates were, I don't think there was any interstate that was actually complete. And most of them were just little bits and pieces, and you'd get off. But Tulane was our primary source of from point A to point B. So,
right.
Anyway, we got in at 4 a.m.
And Rosie's not used to that?
Well, not really. I think even when he started in the business, that most of the interstates were complete. But it was a good time, and like I say, that was the highlight of the show for me, and everybody else on the show were basically, sadly enough, what you expect to see on independent shows. and I won't even elaborate on that because I just won't.
Oh yeah, but you have to cut corners and save money, I think.
Well, see, there you go.
Well, they can't all.
Which is also the downside of you know.
Well, they can't all be star studded.
Well, but here's the deal. It's just I'll touch base on this. I'm back working over at HWA some, helping them out. They've got a great TV slot here, and I'm trying to work with some of their guys to advance their ring techniques, and I'm already being ripped on a message board here that now the HWA shows are going to get more boring and the morale is going down because I'm pushing guys.
No.
But then, see, that was the whole point, too, is back when I had the company, some of the experts on the independent board, who probably have never actually done anything outside of play around at the business to begin with, but anyway, they were saying, well, you know, the guys in HWA all look alike. And a friend of mine said, yeah, they all look like athletes, sadly enough. And it's mentioned that the matches were boring. But, you know, to me, I never trained anybody to keep them with me. I never looked at it. And let me say this, a lot of the pseudo-promoters, pseudo-trainers in independent wrestling are only interested in getting guys to stay with them, and if they can find somebody good, they'll blow smoke up their rear end to the nth degree and try to hang on to them for the little payoff, and that was never my gig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, I'm working with guys, and I always wanted the guys that could move up, and I think I proved that point, but you know, that's the other thing, too, is yes, I don't know that the matches are boring, but to me, independence should be, I've said this a million times, probably a training ground for, you know, for moving up, and it's, I think, more important for the guys to get a sound base in their, you know, in terms of the business, and I think to do that, you've got to work some lengthy matches, and they've got to be, you know, Josh Abercrombie, impressed me. I didn't realize it was him. He had introduced himself earlier in the evening and said, hi, I'm Josh, and I said, hi, I'm Les, and that was it, and we didn't have a conversation, but
right.
When he was announced, I said, oh, okay, this is Josh Abercrombie. I've heard the name, and I know he had worked IWA, and I was really interested in seeing what he did, and he started out with wrestling and established the fact that, hey, these are two wrestlers in the ring, opposed to two clowns or two play babies, and you know, so anyway, that's the deal. I think that that's what I'm looking for when I go to an independent show, is to see the guys actually, you know, trying to do something that may enhance their chances of moving up in the business.
Right.
Opposed to just playing at, hey, let's pretend like we're the guys on Monday night or Thursday night or Friday night. And, you know, and that's what I saw for the most part otherwise. Excuse me. Guys who are just basically, you know, they know where they're at. They're not going anyplace, and so they're entertaining themselves.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I've always said, and a couple people asked me, you know, after the show, they were like, you know, did Les say anything about me? Did he say anything about my match? I said, do you know what the best way to find out what Les thinks about you? Ask him.
Yeah, you're right.
And he will not be shy to tell you. The truth.
Well, you know, the kid that was Rosie's partner, his costume was all wrong for his body type.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I mean, it enhanced his problem area as opposed to disguising them, you know, and I did mention that to him.
And that's part of it, and that's something that a lot of people don't think of.
No, you're right. Well, I went out and I sat down and I watched the first match. And I said to myself, don't go back in the dressing room because somebody in this first match may say, what did you think? And then I will establish myself as an old SOB because it was, you know, but you're right. That's one thing I think anybody that's ever worked with me is don't ask me. If you don't want my opinion, don't ask it. And if you do, then I'm not going to pull any punches. But then that's my job, you know. The same as with Cornette, Danny Davis, Al Snow, Bill DeMont, Joe Hamilton, or anybody that's training guys. And if you're blowing smoke, then you're not doing the guys. You know, here's the deal. If you're an independent worker and you're listening to what we're talking about here, if you're just looking for somebody to compliment you, go to your mother. There's guys doing things wrong that have been in this business 20 years and are working at the top. Mm-hmm. They still make mistakes. So you've got to realize human beings make mistakes. That's just standard procedure. You know, if I don't make one at least every day, I feel like I haven't accomplished anything.
Right.
You know, but I mean, that's the deal. If you ask for a critique, then expect, you know, that was a deal, you know, years ago, and there were times you didn't like it. I remember riding with veterans, you know, on a 2-3 hour trip and being told for the entire time what I'd screwed up in the match. You know, but I learned from that, and you take those things as you know, as constructive, and like I tell a lot of kids I work with, you know, here's the deal. I'm going to tell you know, I'm more about telling you what you did wrong than you know, stroking you and telling you how this was so great, and but there was this problem. And what I'm saying to you is, you know, it's kind of a challenge. Prove me wrong, and I'll be the I'll probably be more excited about it than you will.
Right.
Because I like seeing guys move up. You know, when I see guys work and they show improvement, you know, like if I watch a guy tonight and then 6 months from now I see him again and I see that he's improved, that's cool, man. I'm into that, you know. It's the guys who just flatline and stay in one spot and never get past that and wonder why they don't have a contract and blow smoke up their own rear ends, which is kind of contortionist, aren't they? you know, but I mean, seriously, and honestly, there's a lot of those in the independents, and it's not productive for anybody.
There's already a clip of the a piece of the show going around. It's on YouTube now.
Oh, really?
Of Romeo shoving me out of the ring.
Oh, yeah, you took a bad bump, Doc.
Bad. You know what?
I thought, Jesus.
I didn't want to, like, I didn't want to take it flat and pound the mat and all that, but I forgot he was going to do that. And he did catch me by surprise, and he did push me a little bit harder than I thought he was.
Well, that's very possible, too. Well, and he might have, because he might have also understood that you didn't, you know, you weren't a worker, so
no.
Maybe he pushed you the idea that you had to go down, and he was going to be sure that you did.
Right.
You know. So, you know.
Or maybe it's because I hadn't paid him yet.
Well, maybe that's it, too. I don't know. Maybe that was his way of saying, hey, pay me. You know, I don't know. Whatever.
We are going to put, like, little pieces of the show here and there, and maybe one full match.
You know what? And this never ceases to surprise me, is that there were several people closer to my age than yours. They came up to me, and like one guy says, yeah, I've got Night of Legends from Smokey and enjoyed you and JR's work. And another guy came up and talked to me about, I guess had seen me wrestle when I worked that territory back in the 60s or
right.
Something. I don't know. But that was cool.
You've been through Evansville a few times now.
Well, you know, I was telling Rosie on the way down I forget what little towns we passed through, but I said, I think I've wrestled in this town. But, you know, the Indianapolis office covered Indiana, Ohio, parts of Michigan. Actually, there were two offices. Barnett ran the Indianapolis office, and Johnny Doyle ran the Detroit office, and they covered Michigan, Ohio, West Virginia, Indiana, Kentucky. So, yeah, we hit almost every little town in those states over a period of time.
Yeah. Josh Abercrombie cracks me up, man. We got to get him on the show soon, Pete, because, did you see his sweet hairdo, by the way?
His what?
His sweet hairdo.
Yeah, well, he kept his knit cap on for the greatest part of the. But, yeah, he worked the crowd, I thought, really well. You know, he worked his heel deal. You know, the little things, and I saw all the baby faces come out, and they want to stomp their feet and get applause before they even do anything.
Right.
It's like cheering for yourself, or like asking the waiter. The waiter comes to you and says, give me my gratuity before I wait on you. And I'm going to say no. I want to see what kind of service I'm going to get first, and that's what these guys should understand. What is it about this, hey, cheer for me now, you've never seen me before in your life, but help me out here. And, of course, every babyface had to go around and slap everybody's hand in a joint. And I'm thinking, that's right, elections are coming up in November. They're probably running for mayor of Vincennes. No, and everybody had to climb the turnbuckle and do the rock thing, which drives me nuts at every level. I mean, even on WWE, I'm thinking, Jesus, God. Everybody goes up the turnbuckle and shoots up three fingers, four fingers, the bullhorns, whatever. You know, and I'm thinking, and this is supposed to be a business of creativity.
Right.
And that's just kind of like, you know, hey, these guys came off the same assembly line. They were built by Toyota down in Georgetown, Kentucky or something. I don't know. I'm coming down with my change of season sinus problems.
Yeah, it was pretty cold this weekend.
I guess the pay-per-view on Sunday night was so-so, and not surprising, the best match was Benoit and Regal.
Yes.
And they did their, those guys headbutt each other. I have never seen them have a match that some that both or one did not get split open from the headbutts.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's hard stuff, man, when they
do
it.
Oh, I know. But, and probably I think they should have been given a few more minutes and they would have, but like I say, I think they stole the show. But everybody I've talked to is just come see, come saw. About that particular show, although everybody was pretty entertained last night about the homecoming thing.
Really? Did you like the homecoming show?
I parts of it, yes. You know, there were things that I thought they moved storylines along, and of course, the three champions will be wrestling one another here in Cincinnati next month.
Yeah, I thought they were going to end up doing that last night.
Well,
I mean,
that tells you several things. You know, and they moved some of the storylines along pretty good last night, I thought. And it's just, you know, the whole tag team thing is like, why does DX bother to wrestle anybody? I mean, they're just going to eat them up and spit them out. And then Hunter made some comment about the lack of competitiveness in the tag team division. I thought, well.
That was a shoot.
Yeah, well, but you see, the point is, it's not competitive because no one makes it competitive.
When you realize
this is a business, this is a show, right? So it's not. It's not like, okay, this baseball team or this basketball team doesn't have any quality talent. The talent on any wrestling promotion's roster, to a certain degree, is only as good as you make it. You can have the greatest performers in the world, but if you don't push them and put them out as great performers, then they aren't.
Right, and a couple of weeks ago, they buried three-quarters of the tag team division in one match.
Well, two weeks in a row, as a matter of fact.
Right.
And you know, so, and then, so, you know, I thought, well, maybe last night Lance and Murdoch would have a shot at actually having a match, but no, they got to eat up and spit out. And I've worked with both these guys, and they both have got their hearts in it. Lance spent a year with me here. I worked with Murdoch. He's one of Harley's kids. I worked with him out there and in Vegas. They both have got some talent, and, you know, but again, Hunter and Sean are in the position to elevate these guys. And that's not happening, which, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, I thought the show last night was, the ratings weren't super, but were they 3.8 or 9 or something like that, which is good. But it also tells you something that they realize in the domestic market that the business is not what it should be.
Yeah,
but then again, all this goes right. You know, there's the deal of the shallow rosters, the new guys coming up, and all that. But it comes right back to the creative department and lack of you know, expanding their horizons, so to speak.
I just call it lack of trying. I think they're just complacent right now.
Well, you know, but why? I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I guess
we're going to see Kurt Angle for the first time on Thursday night.
Yes.
And
Kurt,
I guess
and
it was, I guess his interview was very impassioned and scathing, and you know, but I hate that you know, that it's too easy to get heat by saying, hey, I hate Vince McMahon, you know.
Yeah,
I mean it really is, and I don't think that's, well, and I don't think Kurt is taken as a reject either, because of the way he was utilized for the last 6 or 7 years. So you can't really say, well, he's just another guy. He's a jobber from WWE who's finally getting a break. But I don't think it did anything for – I don't think it hurt him, but I don't think it did anything for him to be that negative about Vince. You know, hey, you made a lot of money there.
Right.
That was, you know, like when they were downsizing back in 2001 and when they pulled our contract, you know, a lot of talk shows contacted me wanting to get on – and I told him, I said, look, if you're looking for me to be negative, I can't do that, you know. They could have paid me out in 60 days, and they gave me 90. Due to the fact that it were downsizing, it wasn't something I had done wrong or that, you know, that we had created a problem here at in our camp. I had a brand-new WWE ring, which they allowed me to keep, and the weight equipment, some of the weight equipment that they had given me out of the power plant when they, you know, when they dissolved WCW into the company. So I'm saying, you know, it's business. I can't be negative about that, you know. Mm-hmm. When you're hired, you got to figure you're going to, at some point, you're going to go down the, you know, it was like territories years ago. You went into a territory Very seldom did anybody stay for the life, you know, in one place. So, or even bookers, it's kind of like baseball. You know, the talk now is because the Yankees didn't make the playoffs that Steinbrenner is getting rid of Torrey after, what, 11 years?
Yeah.
Which is a long run with Steinbrenner. But the point is, when managers or head coaches are hired, they know that at some point they're going to be fired or let go, call it whatever you like, you know. So, but, you know, it's, again, I have a high regard for Kurt Angle. I hope he does well with them at TNA. I guess he and Joe had a confrontation, nose-to-nose. I think it's funny, well, I don't know if funny is the right word, but the fact that nobody, you know, Jarrett's the champion, Joe's holding on the belt, and they're working verbal deals with everybody around the belt, and none of these guys have any right to it.
Right.
So I think that's where their creative department is sucking air, you know?
Yeah, and I hope the Angle Joe thing is just a tease for far in the future.
To me, I want, you know, I want to put that, I'd put that off if it were up to me.
Absolutely.
Know? I would milk it for what I could get out of it before I went with it, you know?
Yeah, that's.
And I guess Kane is going to SmackDown.
Yes.
And I thought that was, he did a good job for Umaga. Now I've also heard the rumbles that he may be retiring, which if Glenn does, good for him, you know. He's had a hell of a run. I first worked with him when he was Unabomber for us in Smoky Mountain. He came
right
up with Eddie Gilbert.
And Unabom and Al Snow.
Yeah, I was talking, Rosie and I were talking about that. I remember riding, making some trips down in Smoky with Glenn, and he was very serious about his nutrition and stuff. I was doing competitive bodybuilding at the time. And we discussed, you know, supplements and how to eat. And he was always eating good and taking care of himself. He's worked hard to get where he's at. And
Yes. And he's been through, I mean, he's lived through some horrible gimmicks.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. And he's done a hell of a job. He's made the company money, too. So, he's got a wonderful wife. And they have a nice, I guess they just built a new home, too, in Sevierville, Tennessee. Which is Dolly Parton's hometown. But anyway, it's just out between Knoxville and Gatlinburg is where he's located. And I wish him the best. I mean, he's a good guy. And, you know, if he hangs him up, good for him, man. I'd like to retire at his age.
Yeah, if he does.
I'd like to retire at any age.
If he does, he can call it a good career.
Yeah, I think so.
And be happy.
Yeah.
I hate to see guys hang around, you know, longer than they really should.
Yeah, it's like JR said in one of his blogs on the barbecue site that Flair shouldn't be working every week, and I totally agree with him. And it's not that Rick won't, and it's not a knock, but he is a legitimate icon at this point in his life, and it should be special when he wrestles. You know,
yeah.
I think he's earned that right. I think he's earned the right. There's a sad thing about our business is, you know, there is no union, there's no retirement. And I think at any level, all of us who put in, if we put in 20 years, man, and given what you got to give, you know, there should be some return on that, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and there's not, sadly enough. So.
Yeah, at least some residuals or something.
Yeah, and I, with Flair, I see a value with him. Well, like, say, for example, when the tickets went on sale here in Cincinnati for the November pay-per-view, if they'd have had him at the box office to sign autographs and shake hands and just do promotional work for the majority of the time, and then do the odd match, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I don't like with Rick working now is having ladder matches and gaga like that because at his age. I mean, not that he never took his share of bumps. Excuse me, when he was young, he did. But I think at age 56, 57, it's asking him, that's a bit much to ask him to do that stuff now.
Yeah, I don't think that... It's WWE's part. I think he wants to do it. He wants to be on TV every week.
Oh, well, no, listen, you know, so do I. You know, if God would give me a 30-year-old body, I'd be back there cranking it out if I could, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll be 66 this month, and I don't think that I'm interested right now. I mean, I know better, you know.
Right.
I know I can't. I set a standard for myself, and I can't even get in the neighborhood of that standard any longer, and I know that, so I'm not interested. You know, I've been asked a couple times to wrestle on Legends things, and I've turned it down, you know. I mean, it's not that I'm wealthy and don't need the money, but I need my health more than More than the money, I think.
Right.
So, and you know, you get a bit brittle. I mean, I still work out, and I, you know, still do cardio work and lift, but I'm still old. Whether I like it or I don't.
Yeah, you were a lot bigger than I thought you were.
Yeah.
Like muscular. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I tried, Doc. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know what I was expecting, but it was like, boom, boom, muscles. I was like, whoa.
Well, I, you know, like I say, I still train, and not obviously not lifting heavy like I used to a number of years ago. But
And I knew Rosie was big, and I knew Rosie was tall, but I didn't think he was that big and tall. I took a picture with Rosie. He makes me look like a little kid. I come up to his chest.
Right.
I was like, wow.
I forgot. I was going to mention on the show, too, to everyone, that Doc opened the show in the standard independent mode of 25 minutes late.
Yes.
Of starting. And, I said to Rosie, I said, I know Doc thinks I'm ragging on him, but that was one of the things in my own shows. Now, if we were we had people coming in, I'd send the ring announcer out to make the announcement that, you know, we're holding up to give everybody a chance to get in. But I was anal about starting on time because I know I don't like to sit. You know, I buy a ticket to go to a concert or to a movie, and if it says the movie's going to start at 2 o'clock, my wife will tell you that I start getting fidgety at 1 minute after. You know, hey, wait a minute here. You know, they said 2 o'clock. So.
Right.
I'm about being on time, so I expect the rest of the world to join me, and I know for the most part they're not going to.
Yeah. There were a lot of people that were on time real early. I mean, you got the ring wasn't even ready yet when you and Rosie came in.
Sure.
But some of the guys straggled in at the last minute, and we didn't know if they were going to show
or not. Well, see, now that was something that well, of course, Rosie with his dad was taught how to be a professional. But that was one of the things that we were always asked to be in the dressing room. All promotions had us in the dressing room at 1 hour before the first match went to ring. Now, it didn't matter if you were the last match.
Right.
But see, that also gives the promoter or the booker or both the opportunity to make changes if they have to.
Right.
Right? So you might make a note of that for your next attempt at promotion.
I don't know if that's
okay. Well, if there's going to be one, but I'm just saying, you know, that as you book your people, ask them to be in the dressing room at least 1 hour before the show starts.
Yes. The whole thing was a big learning process, and I did learn a lot. And that's kind of what I wanted to do. I mean, if you're going to talk about it, you should at least have done it before.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get a little bit of experience at running something so I'd know what I'm talking about in the future. So I think it succeeded at that.
Well, good. Then, you know, if it's a learning experience for you, and that's a good thing.
Yes. Like I said, I don't know if we'll do it again, but you know, if we do, I'll know some different things
cool
to do.
I got a phone call today about going to Germany for a few days. To do a training set. Yeah, and now I don't know if it's going to fly. This guy was here in the States. He's friends with the promotion. I don't know how many promotions in Germany. Anyway, this. I don't even know the name of the promotion, but he called to get my prices and see if I, you know, what I would do or not do and so forth. And I said, yeah, I'd be happy to make the trip.
Wow.
Israel is on the agenda, but I told the guy there who works out of our manual, I said, let's wait till the war is over.
Right.
because he had emailed me about a month ago and said, well, I finally got a backer who I think I can afford to bring you over. And I said, yeah, okay. Well, let's wait a little while.
Yeah.
So things, I don't want to come off the plane wearing grenades and jacket and all that sort of stuff.
Looking like Rambo just to protect yourself.
Yeah, I'm not really interested. Thank you very
much.
But,
yeah, WWE, they even canceled.
Yeah, and then they even canceled their reschedule.
Yeah.
So I don't know when they're going back, you know.
If WWE won't go there, and you know, they've been in the middle of Iraq, then...
It says something, doesn't it?
That's telling.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So, yeah, good decision there, Les. But Germany, wow, man, you're going worldwide with the
team. Well, you know what? I think I enjoy it. It's cool. And I'm proud that somebody thinks that we can... You know, that's the other thing at this point, Doc. If you know, it's making a difference. I don't know if it's a legacy. I don't know what you call it, but it's in a part it's giving back. But I don't even have to, you know, anybody listens to this show knows my stance on the business and what I think it should be. So, you know, if I can help in some way, I'm cool with that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Awesome, man. I pretty much thought that it was going to be the state. Is it just going to be you, or are you going to bring any other trainers with you?
Well, I will probably, I don't know if they would swing, you know, the doctor going with me or not, but I would probably take my Matt Stryker with me,
mm-hmm.
because that way I've got a young guy who's totally versed in my style of training and can get in and show the bumps. Again, at my age, I'll get in the ring and lock up with guys and do moves and, but I'm not doing it. I'm not doing backdrops and stuff like that at this point.
Maybe when you retire, Matt Stryker can take over the business and teach the Thatcher method.
You never know. A lot of guys are teaching them. I don't know. I think the method is a combination of Harley, Ricky, myself, Doc, and but anyway, our method is being used in a lot of camps now.
You can call it the Elite method.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
You know, I have a warm up. Thing that I do, I for lack of a better name, I call it the Triple Five. But I know that Al Snow uses that to warm his guys up in OVW, and I know a lot of other guys that use it as well. So
awesome.
I'm cool. Yeah, it's neat. A lot of guys say, well, you're not upset they're using. No, I'm flattered that they think it's good enough to use. You know.
Yeah. Let's get to some news from WWE.
Okay.
The Boogeyman has been re-signed by WWE in the last week.
Sadly enough.
He's going to be training, though, at Booker T School, which is a good school in Houston.
Yeah, he's going to be down at, I guess it was Booker that somebody said to me, well, Booker's got a little stroke in the company. You know what, though, Booker and Charmel are doing a hell of a job with their gimmick. They really are. It's entertaining, but once the bell rings, Booker becomes a wrestler, you know, and doesn't put the whole, you know, cartoon schmoz out there. I watching last night, I was thinking, Book, you know, maybe you should get English accent training or something. You're not exactly Lord Alfred Hayes.
Right. But John Cena did a good one last night.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's some Cena was on... ESPN today.
Cold Pizza, I think, right?
Yeah, and what's his name? The catcher for the White Sox was there. AJ.
Oh, AJ.
Preninsky,
yes.
Yeah. Anyway, he called John out. I mean, obviously just you know, cutting up. And John says he thought he'd seen that X Division belt in a gumball machine out in the lobby or something. And I thought, okay, whatever. You know, Cena, I'll tell you what, I want to see the movie. I'm honestly, if WWE doesn't show me another trailer, I won't be upset. I've seen more trailers of them. I can almost do the voiceovers from heart, you know, almost have them memorized. But I do want to see the movie. I don't think it's ever going to be an Academy Award, but I think it's cool that John's got the shot at it, and it appears like it'll be in the mode of Rock doing Walking Tall again or something.
Right.
You know,
a good hour and a half to kill.
Yeah, there you go.
But I'd like to see it too, because I haven't seen a good action movie in a long time, and it really sounds like a good plot, and I love Robert Patrick ever since Terminator 2.
Yeah,
he's the man.
He's a good heel, isn't he?
Yeah, and he was good on The Sopranos, too. Remember, he was that guy that...
Yeah, I never got into The Sopranos much, but I did catch him on there.
Yeah, he had a gambling problem or something, so he played like a good weenie, too.
Uh-huh.
But, The Marine, that's coming out Friday.
Yeah.
Guys, so
I was... the one thing last night is like when they threw... and when I say this, she's a beautiful lady, and she, as far as I'm concerned, she's nice. What little time I've spent around her, Tori's a great person, and I hope her and Billy are doing well and all. But to put her out in a tournament to win the ladies' title, I just, no, come on. You know, that's Milena looked hot last night. Crystal is the heat getter, boy. That's. But anyway, I would prefer they used actually the women that can actually wrestle well. And build around that.
I thought Beth Phoenix was supposed to be coming back soon.
Who?
Beth Phoenix.
Well, she's in OVW.
Ah,
yeah,
okay.
She's down there, I guess, getting ready to go.
I knew she couldn't still be injured.
You know what's so cool? It's obvious that Benoit did some, worked out somewhere, somehow, some way, because he didn't appear to have any ring rust, and he seemed to be, you know, just picked right up where he left off, bless his heart. That's, I mean, he's a tremendous performer. But that was when we mentioned Beth Phoenix and OVW, which triggered me thinking, well, you know, and he may have gone to Deep South or something. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. You know, that was like when he came back from the neck fusion. He came up to my camp, and opposed to working out with all of us, he Craig Zellner, who I trained, Ray Steele was his professional name, and had a contract. And Jamie Noble, he took the two of them. And he said, dude, I'll use the second ring if it's all right, because he knew those two guys could work his style, and you know, that's what he wanted to get back. So, yeah, I said, cool. But he may have gone to Deep South or someplace, because I don't think he's missing a lick, boys. It's not like he's rusty.
That's good.
Yeah.
Bob Holly springs to mind when you talk about guys like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and, yeah, Bob is, you know, I know a lot of people are down on Holly, but he works his butt off, and I personally like the guy. I really do. I like his work ethic and his attitude, you know.
Yeah, and, well, really when you're talking about business, you're talking about wrestling, that seems to be all that matters, you know, if he's a jerk outside of...
Well, you know what, let's face it, all of us in this business have egos.
Right.
I mean, that, to say otherwise would just be stupid. I mean, you know, and I've said this to kids that I've trained, or, you know, we can all say, well, we're doing this for whatever reason, but the reason is we want to get half naked and let people look at us.
Right.
Right? And be in front of a crowd.
Like, check this out.
Or like Cena said on Cold Pizza, you know, when they asked him if he jumped to movies exclusively, and he said, I don't think so, because, you know, there's nothing like working in front of a crowd. And Rock has said that himself, you know. And we were talking about Flair earlier. That's why Flair is still bumping out there at age 56 or 7, and why Hogan goes back with a bad hip, and then Roddy Piper comes back. And, you know, it's a drug there's no rehab for, Doc.
Right.
You can't send us to rehab and get us over this. It's not going to happen.
Here's another thing that's happened over the week that's kind of confusing, and you could take it either way, but PWInsider.com reported that World Wrestling Entertainment renewed the rights to New World Order and NWO on September 27th, which was last Wednesday. Also, Friday, TNA re-signed Kevin Nash.
Yes, to do a shtick with the X Division,
yes.
Which I can only think that that's probably Russo. You know, and again, I, you know, from what I've read about this taping, Russo hasn't done anything ungodly off the charts.
Yes.
At this point, and I don't know with Kevin if they do. And Kevin's got a great personality and does good promos, and that's cool. Well, Jake Roberts was on too.
Yes.
As a referee for the I'm cool. I'm up with that. I don't think Jake's a tremendous mind. And if they utilize him in the creative, I said, you know, and listen, I think he could be of help.
We actually reported, I believe, last week that the Jake the Snake deal had fell through, and they weren't going to pick him up. So
yeah.
they got us again, my friend.
Well, you know, you mentioned the NWO. I saw today, too, that Marvin Ward's running his yearly charity show he does for a hospital up in Virginia, and that Scott Hall is going to second or manage whatever X-Pac on that particular show against Evan Courageous. In one of the matches. So all the old NWO guys are kind of surfacing here all at the same time.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Something's fishy.
Okay. And speaking of different people and odd things happening, our friend Chris Canyon went on the Howard Stern show.
Yes.
Howard tried to call Vince, and Chris was pitching the fact that Vince may be gay, and I'm thinking, God, Chris, you know, you only need dig a hole 6 feet to bury yourself, and you're at about 10 feet and still getting deeper. And when I say that, you know, it's somebody's going to say, well, you know, he came right out and said what he thought, but it's like, God, I don't see, and that's the other thing, too. I know some gay guys in the business who it may not be public, and I don't really care,
right.
quite frankly. And I you know, and I don't want to get over with the general public by outing them. If they want to be outed, that's up to them. But I think if Chris legitimately wants to get back to work, then this is not the way to do it, you know. I know Cena's supposed to be on Stern, and Stern is always about, you know, sensationalism anyway, and I'm so, well, I shouldn't say afraid, but I can see him calling Canyon to get Canyon on the line to talk about WWE with Cena in the studio, and but to try to call Vince and include him in that situation, I just that's not cool.
I had read Chris Canyon's blog, and he said that Howard Stern was his hero, and it had always been his dream to do this interview and be on the Howard Stern show. And
Well, I guess since he was on, and then they called him and talked to him on the phone about something else. I know when I read the report, whoever it was that wrote the report, and I do not remember, said that they might as well make him a regular. You know, find him a seat next to Robin.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, okay, cool.
Yeah, he made the appearance on Friday. He called back to the show on Monday and was answering questions. And now he's answering questions on Howard Stern's message board.
Whatever.
So.
He's going to be over here in Northern Kentucky for gay liberation, making a speech or something. I'm not sure if it's at the Northern Kentucky University or whatever. I'm not even sure when that is. I think maybe that's this week or next. I honestly don't know. But,
I had figured, Chris Cannon, he wanted to come out of the closet, and he wasn't happy being in the closet. And he finally came out, and I really did think that was going to be the end of it. I didn't think he wanted to give speeches or anything like that. That's the impression he gave off to me.
I've had this conversation over the last week with a couple people. I said, this wasn't, I'm like you, and I know where you're going with this. When he was on the show, he was very articulate, but very subdued.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It wasn't like he was trying to out the world.
Right.
I can go back 40 years to a guy that the first couple years when I broke in, it was up in Boston, and he's passed away now, so I'm not even going to bother to use his name, but he was gay. And the crazy thing was, when this guy would get a few beers in him, anybody he'd talk about, he'd say, well, he's gay. To him, the world was gay, right? We were all just hiding, right?
Right.
Which was funny in a way and sad in another,
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like if you're a Catholic in a Protestant neighborhood and then you're trying to say, well, everybody's really a Catholic. It's just that they're not saying they are or something like that. But again, I like Chris Canyon. I liked his work. And I hate to see him, get a reputation as being a flake off the wall, I could care less about his sexual persuasion, his religious beliefs, or his politics.
Yeah.
The
bottom line is
he's treated me nice. I've treated him nice. He's been respectful, and I appreciate that. And I hate to see him burn bridges. That's all. If he really wants to work in the business, and I'm so afraid that's what he's doing.
I don't know. It's so confusing to me because, like you said, he was subdued on the show. I mean, I just thought he wanted to get it out there.
Yeah,
and
when you and I talked about it coming on, I was not leery of Chris as Chris Canyon, but leery of the whole, gay issue, whether he was going, to get crazy about it. And, of course, he didn't.
Right.
And he, like I say, he was very articulate, very honest, and it was an informative conversation, I think, for us as well as for the listeners.
Yeah.
To get past this, I'll say it one more time. I hate to see him burn bridges, and I'm afraid that's what he's doing.
You think it's sort of like a Brian Pillman type of episode?
No, I don't. I think Pillman worked all the time. I think he got out of bed in the morning working.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I think Brian realized with the raspy voice and the bad guy reputation. Several times he played that with a twinkle in his eye. And I said that on the Pillman tape. I thought that not that he wasn't a badass or that he wasn't couldn't handle himself and hold his own in a street fight or in a wrestling ring or whatever, but. I think that sometimes he just messed with people's heads.
Right.
No, but I don't think Chris is doing that. I don't think that's what it is at all. And if it is, it's the wrong heads he's messing with.
Yeah, but I know when Teddy Hart got a reputation as being hard to work with and people didn't
like
him.
Well, I don't think that was just – well, you heard what Steve Corino said. And I think that's pretty much one of his uncles after – you remember when we were doing the other show, and I met Teddy in New Jersey, and Teddy had said, well, I read your column that you wrote where I should be. He said, I do respect. I said, I'm not really the flake that you think I am, and In fact, he did somebody else interview, and he said, yeah, I met Les Thatcher, and I wasn't a jackass that he believed that I was. And is he? I don't know. But then a few months later, I ran into one of his uncles, and I said, I met your nephew, Teddy. And he said, oh, Christ, did he upset you too? And I said, well, not really. You know, he was cool. But I think Teddy tends to want to play with people's heads, it's the wrong heads at the wrong time.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing I'm getting from it. Because when Teddy started that whole thing, promoters were actually calling him up. They wanted him to come on the show because he didn't know what he was going to do. And I don't know if this is some ploy by Chris Kanyon to be sort of the same way, you know?
Well, like I say, if indeed he and Vince McMahon or he and Jeff Jarrett or Dixie Carter or somebody had sat down and said, hey, this is, you know, which is, with Pillman, it was Bischoff knew he was going to, what he was going to say, knew he was going to, and they were going to sever the contract. Of course, he played Bischoff there, too, but I see the strength in that. Okay, well, you know, Brian doesn't have a contract with WCW, so this can't possibly be a work, right?
Right.
But I think, you know what, and the offshoot of that is so now, so many promoters, including Eric Bischoff or Vince Russo or whoever, have tried to work the boys, and I think that's a bad thing.
Yeah,
I think that's a. I mean, if you're doing it as a joke, now I've had working arguments with guys in front of somebody in front of a few of the boys just to mess with their heads a little bit. But you didn't carry on for weeks and months and then say, oh, it was all a work.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I did it with the kids I trained. I refereed a match one night. This was before I started HWA when I was training for the first guy that I'd ever trained anybody for, and I was refereeing, and I told the kid that I was, we set this thing up, and he was supposed to knock me down and get disqualified, and which he did, but then I said, and throw a couple extra punches, and so anyway, I came out of the ring mumbling, you know, babbling obscenities, and I was going to get my hands on him. And a funny thing was, the next match going in, the manager forgot about his match and followed me back to the dressing room because he thought he was going to see a fight. You know? And I came in and I yelled at the kid. I said, boy, and I ran up to him and we looked at each other and then I grabbed him and hugged him and we started laughing. But, I mean, the whole rib lasted 2 minutes, right?
Right.
I mean, not 2 months or 2 weeks. But I think that's something that was an offshoot of the Pillman deal, Booker Man deal, that I think is bad for the business, you know.
Yeah.
So, whatever. I think the way Dixie Carter and set up her hiring angle, it wasn't. She didn't work her roster. She just didn't inform them,
right.
You know. So she didn't take them in the wrong direction, and having people sign the confidentiality agreements that were in the know, I think was a smart move too.
Yeah, it's a very hard thing to keep something like that a secret for that long, and they did pull it off, and I have to give them credit for that.
Well, you know,
it's better.
When I'm teaching last night over at ACWA, I reiterated again, and I mentioned this to Ivan Sell all the time. What the young workers have got today on their side, the only thing that they actually have work, you know, that they can be guaranteed is the element of surprise. And I tell them, don't telegraph, you know, an angle 6 weeks out or 6 minutes out, you know, and don't set up a spot to where the people actually know what you're going to do.
Yeah, like setting up two tables on top of each other and then wrestling for like 30 seconds.
Well, Robert Anthony and I talked. That was one of the things that we mentioned where he set his opponent up and went to the top rope and. You know, and I said, okay, and you have styled and profiled, and you knew that the guys were going to, you know, everybody, I mean, anybody that's been watching wrestling knew that he wasn't going to be there when you came down, right? Or he was going to nail you with the foot up, you know, one or the other.
Right.
And if you'd have gone up with that Benoit intensity, not played with the people at all, and come off and he nailed you, then you would have had the element of surprise. But when you set it up like you see everybody else set it up, then the fans, and it's not necessarily the smart marks that are on the internet, but just people that watch wrestling to a great degree know exactly what you're going to do.
Right.
So the idea is to not let them know.
And I hate going back to the Wrestling Weekly Independent Show so much, but did you see when they were going to do the arm wrestling challenge. When they brought the table and the chairs into the ring, the crowd started going nuts. They thought we were going to have a hardcore match right there.
Or something, yeah. Well,
I was like, no, no. It probably was a letdown that we were going to do some arm wrestling.
Well, you know what? And the coach did all right for somebody that's not, you know, with the program and all. I thought
he did.
You
know, he really did.
You know, I didn't realize who he was in the dressing room. Nobody introduced us, and he didn't introduce himself. And
right.
I said to Maddie, I said, he's somebody's manager.
Yeah.
And the one thing that was kind of cute, this, the one skinny kid had the monkey hanging out of his trunks, and whoever's listening, don't misconstrue that. I mean, legitimately, he had a stuffed monkey hanging by his arm
right. From
his trunks, and I kept looking, and I said, okay, and this guy is like really, well, he doesn't look like a wrestler,
right.
But I mean, nice kid. And I said, could I ask you a question? And he said, yeah. And I said, what's the deal with the monkey? And he said, oh my God, I'm a zoologist. and I'm thinking, okay, he's the first wrestler in 46 years I've ever heard that came across. His gimmick was being a zoologist. And I guess the monkey was, but I don't know how you portray, you know, got that across to fans who've never seen you before.
I didn't know that.
He had his wrist taped, and on one wrist it said monkey, and the other wrist it said love. And I said, I can see the love, the way he was standing. I couldn't see, that was, love was on his left wrist, and I said, what's on your right wrist? And he showed me, he said, monkey love. I said, yeah, they canceled that TV show. Said, yeah, they did, didn't they? I said, yes.
His name is Safari Stu Early.
His name is Safari Stu Early.
Yes, and
that's his working name or his real name?
That's his working name. And he works up with Robert Anthony up in AAW, in the Chicago area.
Does he really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whatever. I mean, I'm. You know, if you say so.
But
that's, there's something too. When I say I'm not trying to be negative. The fact that the kid tried to come up with something and it hadn't been done, I'm up with that. It's just that I thought, how do you convey that, you know, without an interview, without, how does a zoologist dress? We had the first golfer, Chip Fairway, right? He came up with the idea, and I forget now. He either had the first name and I gave him the second, or he had the first or the second and I gave him the first, whatever. But we got together on. But he, you know, he carried a golf club. He dressed like, you know, with the knickers, and dressed like a golfer. So it wasn't hard to know. Hey, this guy's portraying a golfer.
Right.
You know, but I don't know how you get across the idea that you're a zoologist.
I think a zoologist, wouldn't he wear like a lab coat?
I don't know.
I don't know. Well,
but I don't think the monkey hanging out of your trunks is. I think that might convey something, but I'm not sure what.
Is that supposed to be double entendre?
I don't know. You know, the guy's got a monkey hanging out of his trunk. Okay, well, he's obviously a zoologist. The fact that I'm sitting there looking at this and looking, and finally I had to ask, right? Because
right.
And if you'd held a gun on my head and said, tell me what this guy's gimmick is, I'd just said, have to say, shoot me, because zoologists would have not even been in the top 500 guesses, you know.
I thought it was sort of like a Tarzan sort of gimmick.
It was a what?
I thought it was a Tarzan type of gimmick, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that, so you taught me something. But, you know, speaking of stuff hanging out of trunks.
Excuse me?
Speaking of stuff hanging out of trunks, No Mercy. We got to see a little bit more of William Regal than most people wanted to.
Well, yeah, from what I hear, you know what, but I don't know. I'm told that, you know, if you really weren't looking for it, probably a lot of people missed it. I think it's nice that the company, I thought it was kind of funny when they say that we're looking at family entertainment. I thought, yeah, okay. Who's zooming who here?
I saw a response to that on a message board somewhere, and somebody said, in the words of Gorilla Monsoon, what a fountain of misinformation.
Yeah, but you know, we'll see. Yeah, and that's, again, do I want to see Regal's bare rear end? I don't really. I've seen the showers before, you know.
Right.
And it wasn't, you know, I didn't stop and stand. Oh, man, I've got a chance to look at William Regal. I don't see the value in all that. I won't even go into one of my famous rants about that. I just don't see that, especially with a guy that can wrestle, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't need that.
I hope that Finley and Benoit get a chance to work.
Absolutely.
You know, I read today that I think it was Dave Shear said that doesn't Finley using these shillelagh and the midget kind of offset the fact that he's about, you know, loves to fight and he's a badass, and it does. You know, but then that's, to me, I don't see why Triple H needs a sledgehammer. I didn't ever saw why Scott Steiner needed a crowbar, and you know, and because these guys, the look at them, you don't think they need anything.
Scott Steiner's left bicep is a crowbar.
I've heard that.
By itself, man. But yeah, when I did see the leprechaun come out of the ring last night, it reminded me.
And he pulled Ray under. I found out now that I can actually see SmackDown, and I didn't know that. One of the kids over at HWA told me that that the CW network is on channel 913. And I was what I read in the papers, right? And supposedly it starts on channel 20 here on Time Warner on the 18th of this month. And so I when I got home last night, I checked out channel 913. And we have like 1,100 channels, you know, Time Warner, which I don't get them all, obviously, but I had not thought to look in the 900s for anything to do with local programming.
Right.
But now I can watch OVW and HWA and SmackDown.
Excellent. So. And you know what I found out last week?
I give up.
We get Deep South Wrestling here.
You do?
Yes.
Wow.
On MAV TV.
Oh, so you get MAV TV. See, I don't think we get it. I don't have the patience to go through 1,100 channels one by one to figure out what I have and what I don't.
Right. I just happened to come across it.
Yeah, well, good.
Yeah, so more Deep South reports on the show from
now
on.
Well, that's cool, and you get to see it. And actually, for you know, other than just relaying what we read on somebody else's report, you can actually give one yourself. That's
cool. Exactly, yeah. And now I can do, of course, SmackDown again.
Uh-huh.
So that's good. Back to some more news. PW Insider reports that Kurt Angle's not going to be taking independent bookings as far as wrestling events right now. There was a promotion that was they were promoting Kurt Angle was going to come down, and then I believe it was 3 hours later they took it down.
Yeah, I heard that.
TNA and Bill Barron's had come up and made the decision that Angle can do autograph sessions, personal appearances, but right now he's going to only be wrestling for TNA events.
I think that's cool, and I think on several levels. One, if it's we've talked about the concern for his health, and I think that's the major concern, that he heals as close to 100% as he can get before he gets into any type of steady schedule in ring.
Right.
Secondly, here's the deal with guys working, and here's something, and I'll compare it with something. When I had the WWE contract, if, for example, you had wanted to use one of my guys, they were not adverse to me sending guys out, but here was two of the I won't say stipulations, but two of the things they suggested, and I totally agreed. One, to be sure your ring was a good ring, because a bad ring is dangerous. Guys can get hurt in it, right?
Right.
And secondly, they suggested that if you wanted one of my guys, that I suggest you take two and put them against one another.
Right.
That way you're sure of what they're doing out there, too. Because mm-hmm. Two of the best workers in the world can end up getting hurt by accident.
Right.
And it's just like some idiot who can't even fight could get a lucky punch in on Muhammad Ali and knock him down.
Right.
Doesn't mean he's a great boxer. But that's the thing, too, with Kurt. It's not that Kurt can't handle himself or he's not a tough guy, but he can go out there and work with some guy on the independents who's isn't safe to work with, and end up getting hurt worse by accident. You know, so I think it's a great call. Honestly, I think it's a smart call on his part or the company's part or whoever made that decision.
That's what I really tried to do. Like, for this show, because it was a one-time thing, the show we had over the weekend, I took these guys that had wrestled each other before, and I put them together. The King of Extreme match, those guys are brothers.
You know what? That whole King of Extreme title thing, what is Extreme about?
Nothing. Well, it's just...
Good question, Les. I don't have an answer. Just say that, Doc. Go ahead.
No, I do have an answer. It's okay. All the matches are... All the championship matches are no count-outs, no DQs.
Oh, okay. All right.
And that's where it gets the title from. But there was no doing hardcore
that,
there.
That
anyway.
Little, and you know what? I'm sure he's a nice kid. That little skinny son of a gun. That I just kept looking at him and thinking, my God, he may be the skinniest wrestler I've ever seen.
It's pretty close.
And they, you know, it's just, well, again, this is a business of image and illusion and so forth and so forth and so forth. And there is no illusion there that he might be able to whip somebody's rear end. I just, you know, and that's part of it. I mean, do you stop and think when you were a kid? I know when I was a kid and I would go to the matches. I remember one time back when I was I forget who it was in the ring. But anyway, I think it was Johnny Behrens and Magnus and Maurice, but they glommed the baby faces. And there was a minor riot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Behrens nailed this, I mean, split this guy wide open, a fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it, as a, I don't know how old I was, to tell you the honest truth, at that point in time, but I know that that sealed, I mean, the thought that, I mean, I think we all, you know, when you believed and you saw the heels do something dashly, you'd think, yeah, boy, I wish I could punch him or do. And I still thought that, but it was never. It certainly dispelled any myth that I might have jumped up and run to the ring to help out, right?
Right.
You know, and to me, that's the image that I'm looking for from guys. So,
mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not knocking. I mean, I'm sure he's a nice kid, you know, and he goes out there and does what he can, and he works hard. But I'll never misconstrue the fact that he might whip somebody's rear end.
Yeah.
You know.
But, well, like I was saying, those two knew each other. They're brothers. They wrestled each other. Josh Abercrombie and C.J. Otis, they're both from Michigan. They both worked each other.
Oh, really? Otis, I see some potential in Otis, but he's, geez, just a lot of things he does. Well, here's one thing, again, the long blonde hair, I'm not adverse to it, but it was in his face, and your face is... tells part of the story.
That's true.
So I couldn't see if he was laughing, crying, or what,
mm-hmm.
you know, most of the time. And I told Josh when he came to me and asked me what I thought, is the kid went to the people too often? You know, I mean, it was like, oh, should I hit him? Listen, he stole your car and shot your dog, and you're asking me if you should hit him? I mean,
right.
Come on, what is that? But you see my point?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, well, again, it's and like I told Josh, I said, this is not a game show. It's not audience participation. You're supposed to get the reaction from what you do to one another, not asking, please applaud for me. Please tell me if I should hit this guy.
I see that all the time, though.
Oh,
TV.
I know. I know. It's cheap heat. Plain and simple.
Hulk Hogan was the first guy I saw do that.
Well, but see, that's the whole other thing, too. He does and he doesn't if you really watch him. It was like Steamboat as a babyface. If you watch him... when he gets into his comeback, he will nod like left and right, but he doesn't stop and ask, should I hit this guy?
Right.
I mean, you know, some redneck watching the show is saw the guy next door kick his dog, and he went over and punched him. He didn't ask the other neighbor if he should hit him. You get my point?
Mm-hmm.
I just try to parallel everything with realism. And the whole stomping your foot and clapping your hands, if you walk out in the parking lot tonight, Doc, and two guys jump you and there's people watching... and you finally get a chance to get a shot in, you're not going to turn to the people watching and stomp your foot and clap your hand, right? You're going to punch the son of a bitch, right?
I might ask them if I should hit them.
Oh, well, after they've already beat your butt, I don't think so.
Give them a rock bottom.
but you see my point?
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing is, when you get into an atmosphere where the lights are down, the ring lights are up, and, you know, the people kind of get caught up in things, but when they go home... let's say you and I went to the matches tonight and we saw this and we go home and we finally calm down and we're sitting at home talking about what we saw. Well, the adrenaline's not up any longer. There's not that atmosphere to get us easily hooked. And we're going to think either this is all BS or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I would prefer that you sent the people home. When the adrenaline settled down, they thought, well, you know, maybe Doc was really mad at Les or... or maybe he really did hurt him.
Right.
You know, keep that lingering doubt in their mind. That's our job.
Yeah.
That is our job.
That's sort of the thing I wanted to to you know, have fans go home with. I had a couple other ideas set up, but they didn't want to use them. The booker didn't want to use them.
Well, they came to Rosie with this convoluted deal, and Rosie pitched it to me because he knew I I'm too stupid to be politically correct
or
to be subtle about it. Well, it's just like, okay, well, this guy's going to come out and he's going to help me do a beatdown, and then we're going to tell people he's the commissioner, and then he's going to be the referee of the match. And I'm thinking, I said, well, have you ever been here before? No. I said, well, isn't that a bit much for the fans to digest in all at once? Is the guy has actually changed costumes or changed jobs 6 times in the last 10 seconds?
I'm glad you were there to tell him that, because I had been trying to do that for 2 weeks.
Well, see, what it amounted to, we're not going to name names here. They know if they're listening, and you and I know, so I'm not trying to put anybody down. But the point was, hey, I want to get involved in a match so I can say I was in a match with Rosie or Romeo Roselli, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a fantasy trip for those two guys, and I know it is. So, which I understand, but in the course of the business, it's still a business to me. So
yeah.
I can't really say it's cool, right?
Yeah.
But it didn't make any sense to Rosie either,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I was saying, okay, first of all, why are you out there to begin with? And then you're involved in the beatdown, and then you tell, well, you're the commissioner, and now you're going to referee. Well, why am I going to go out there with you referee, and you just help this guy kick my can?
Mm-hmm.
Why? It's like, do you think the Yankees would have taken the field against the Tigers if they knew all the umpires were on the Tigers' payroll?
Right.
Torrey pulled his team off the field and said, hey, again, it's my problem with wanting to parallel everything with realism.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's our job, you know.
And whose ideas did they end up using?
Mine. Was it your idea?
Yeah, I remember.
We
were talking about
that's
a locker
right.
room.
That's
you were
right.
like,
that's right.
Doc, that actually made sense. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I did say that.
Yeah.
Scared me.
A lot of people actually believe that the commissioner was out cutting a promo, and this lady got up from her seat in the stands and chased him out the back door. And a lot of people thought that was part of the show, but it actually wasn't. That was not set
well,
up.
Well, see, but it was so. But that was so hokey. Well, in that first match, again, we weren't that. I kept looking at that manager in the first match, and I'm thinking, so I put the Undertaker in a dryer, and he shrunk. But anyway.
Oh, that's so mean.
But here's something too, and I'm sure they didn't think about it. They were just trying to get a reaction at the cost of anything. Okay. For those listening, the first match on the card was a four-way, all right? And there was one of the guys in the four-way had a manager. So the match wasn't even a minute old, and one of the four participants jumped out of the ring and, got the attention of the manager and browbeat him, and the manager picked up a chair, and he chased the guy all over the armory. Okay, well, here's what they accomplished. They accomplished in taking a portion of the fans, what portion, I don't know, taking a portion of the fans' attention away from the ring,
mm-hmm.
which made no sense. And here's the other thing. Managers don't chase. Managers are supposed to be the guys who aren't tough, and they don't chase wrestlers with chairs. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, if I own this promotion, here's two guys who would have their butts reamed verbally when they came to the back. Because it was totally counterproductive to the match.
Mm-hmm.
And for the guy to get out and pull this whole shtick a minute in made no sense either.
There was another thing, and I'm glad we didn't do this, but when Romeo pushed me down and was cutting his promo, we were going to do a thing where I went backstage and I was going to try to quit. But it was just going to be me going backstage and then the commissioner coming out, pointing me back to the ring, and making me go back to my seat. And I was like, no, because you know what? That's going to take the attention away from
the other
Romeo's
point is,
promo.
The other point is, whether you got 10,000 people or 10 people, does anybody really care if the ring announcer quits?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
I
mean, not. Now, I'm not throwing
know.
It. Huh? I'm not throwing this at you, but I mean.
I guess you wouldn't have one.
Well, but the point is, and the commissioner came out and said the ring announcer quit. Would you expect the fans to start a chant or to get up and leave in mass or sign a petition? They didn't come to see the ring announcer to begin with, right? Except for your two nieces and your mom and dad, right?
Well, it was my hometown, actually.
Well, okay, so. But still, you get my point.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you know, it's they don't people don't buy tickets to watch announcers or referees. So when I see either or both involved in angles, I just think, why waste the time?
Yeah, the point I was trying to make though is that I decided that we shouldn't do that because then you've split what you're looking at, you know.
While we're getting into small intricacies that make and this is something I don't think anybody was there thought about in the terms that I'll explain it, but I think there's sensors in the subconscious of all wrestling fans that set off trigger something is makes sense or doesn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's positive or it's negative. It makes you react to the match in a way that the wrestlers want, or it just makes you not react at all. But now, when setting up the main event, when the kid that was to be Rosie's partner, he was going to come out and cut this, you know, like, man, I want a shot at that title, and you've dissed me, right?
Right.
Okay, so to me, he comes out with the Benoit look. In other words, hey, I'm coming to kick somebody's rear end. He goes straight to the ring and gets to the heart of the matter if he's really mad, right?
Right.
But this kid comes out and spends time slapping hands. How mad could he have been?
Good point.
I know. I know. But see, to me, it's those little things that tie all the other things together, right? And
mm-hmm.
it's the things that most people don't actually see, but they do see.
They don't see it, and they might not notice it, but it will.
But it has a negative effect on how they react to things.
Right, but they don't know why.
No, you're right, they don't.
But that's why, and that's a very good point.
So sadly enough, a large percentage of the wrestlers in independents don't know why either. They should, you know. But see now, to me, those are the details that were laid out to me as a young guy learning the business. And to me, those are the details that I see. You know, when I had a company, I sat down and I said, okay, if we're doing now, I tell the baby face, you don't go out there and slap hands and kiss babies and run for mayor of Vincennes. If you're really mad at the guy in the ring, then you go straight to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Now the people understand that you're mad. But when you came out of the dressing room, the more time you spent on the floor shaking hands, you were killing your own heat. Get my point?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
I rest my case.
I love learning at your feet, Les.
Don't be at my feet. Stand up, look me in the eye, please. I can't afford to pay you big money to look at my feet.
Old school in the chat room has a question. He said, that's not a good one. I want to ask the other one. Oh, Les, how choreographed were the matches in your day?
Not the finish. We knew the finish, and if that lasted a minute and a half or two, you knew the finish. If it were three falls, you knew three finishes.
Mm-hmm.
If it was somebody I had worked with and I had a chance to talk to them, you might say, if you remember that spot we did in such and such a town, yeah? Well, if it fits, and see, there's the key phrase, if it fits. If it fits into the match, then we'll throw it in. If it doesn't fit, we won't, you know? So that's pretty much the extent of it. But if it fits is the big key phrase to that. You know,
true, yeah.
And that's the other thing, too. I've told kids that I train, it's like they talk, sit down, and I see kids sit in the corner and talk 45 minutes about a match that's going to last 10. And they, what the hell can they be laying out? What can they be talking about?
Right.
The first time I met Ric Flair was in a ring. In Richmond, Virginia, at the Fairgrounds Coliseum. We worked a match. I had never seen before in my life. He'd never seen me. The referee had, back in those days, called the guys to the middle of the ring like they do boxers or the UFC guys still do. And we introduced ourselves in the middle of the ring and established that I would lead the match because, uh-huh, obviously I was the veteran and he was getting his first year in the business. So we didn't have a chance to lay anything out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we play off each other. I know somebody the other night. When I was over at HWA, I realized they had choreographed their comeback, and I said, you know what? In all the thousands of matches that I've had in my life, I don't know. I never had a clue what my comeback was going to be till I made it.
Right.
And you just play off of whatever's there in front of you. You know, you take advantage of whatever's available.
It's too much to over-choreograph a match.
Well, guys, you know what? Here's the craziest thing. The guys forget it anyway. I mean,
right.
A great portion of it. Or they spend more time with that quizzical look on their face trying to remember what the move 47, what was move 47 coming after move 46, and instead their faces should be telling part of the story. You know,
right.
The
right.
pain, the anguish, the elation, whatever the case may be.
And if you're going to, well, that's why training is so important, so you know what works, what doesn't,
yes.
and it'll just come to you, and you'll
let me say this, that B.J. Whitmer, Matt Stryker, Nigel McGuinness, are names that you guys would know. Jamie Noble is a great worker. Rosie, Umaga, Charlie Haas. Charlie Platt was a guy I did TV with in Dothan, Alabama. Lance Cade. No matter, these guys were training. We were training four times a week, even if we had shows. Well, we had a show on Tuesday night, so we worked on promos during the day Tuesday. But we trained Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and had shows on Saturday and TV on Sunday. And we still trained. It's the same reason Brett Favre, who's going into the Football Hall of Fame on the first ballot, still goes to summer practice. As great as he is, he still has to stay sharp, you know? And I hate to see this. I know there's kids in HWA who don't practice anymore. And if I owned the company still, they wouldn't be they wouldn't be working shows.
Yeah, you should always, there's no time to stop.
Well, you know, here's the deal. If I'm still trying to improve what I do after 46 years, why shouldn't they try after 46 minutes or 46 days?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just insane to think that.
Another question coming out of the chat room
okay.
for you, Les. Is it hard to work with someone if you don't get along with them in real life, or is it just business?
It's just business. You know, I'm full of analogies and expressions, as anybody who's ever worked with me knows. And, you know, one of the things that I tell kids that I train, you know, if the devil can work, I'll book him. I don't have to sleep in his bed or eat at his table, you know, and it is business. Well, it's like this thing with Batista and Booker. You know, it doesn't matter. It's, well, Foley and Flair, right?
Right.
Had all the war of words, but it's business. Can we make money together? Yes, well, then why would we screw that up?
Right.
You know, which is not to say that some guys haven't, you know, but for me, it was never, that was never a problem, you know, and for most guys it's not, I don't think.
If someone potatoes you, do you retaliate or let it go?
Well, you know, for the most part, you know, if it's a young guy, you may pop him. I never set out to intentionally hurt anybody in my life. I honestly have never done that. Now, if the first potato, you just kind of figure it's a mistake. Guys, you know, some of the best punchers in the world, some of the loosest workers, some of the easiest guys to work with can make a mistake. We all do.
Right.
You know, if you catch, I'll tell you a quick story about, and I won't even mention, again, I don't want to embarrass anybody.
Right.
One guy's dead, the other guy's still alive. But this was in Nashville at the old Fairgrounds Coliseum. And you went back to the dressing room between falls. And this guy, the guy who was the heel, picked his shots to get a reputation as a tough guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'd light up some young guys and intimidate them. But I don't know that he wasn't tough or was. But anyway, the baby face he was with, he was stiff. He was stiff of the face once, twice, three times. And at that point, the face realized, who was a hell of a worker, by the way, and a good guy, always trying to have the best match he could. He realized that the heel was just trying to be a jackass.
Mm-hmm.
So, returning to I'll take it back. It wasn't the Fairgrounds in Nashville because we were in separate dressing rooms. But anyway, it was where everybody went in different entrances, but ended up like in the same dressing room. And when we came to the back, this baby face said to the guy, he said, "Look, we're going to play a little game, you know. And I'm going to sell your stuff until it gets too stiff. And then when you see me not sell it, protect yourself, because I'm going to take a shot at whipping your ass." Right? You know, but well, you know, but again, that's it's a business, man. I'll tell you what, the kids today are stiffer than we were.
Yeah.
I mean, I know in training, I'll lock up and I'll see this kid grimace, and then he'll look at me with a, oh, my God. You know, when I take my, there's an old saying from our day, you know, convince the fans, not the guy you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't feel anything, and he shouldn't. You know, but I tease kids sometimes, and, you know me, I've got a sarcastic sense of humor. Anyway, a kid will lock up and be stiff. I'm like, are you mad at me?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Well, man, I've been in street fights that are easier than this. You know? But well, part of that is, too, is when the kids are self-trained or they've basically learned with somebody else who has learned with somebody, you know, I mean, not learned with solid veteran professionals, then they don't understand that, right?
Right.
But it's I can sell something for you and make you look like $1 million if I don't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
The minute I start realizing that you're stiff, and if I don't know you, then I'm not sure whether you're just a lousy worker or you're actually trying to hurt me. But either way, I don't want to get hurt. So from that point forward, I'm going to be careful with what I give you.
Right.
You know. So that's you know, that's basically the way it is.
The last word about the Wrestling Weekly Independent Show this weekend. We are going to have some pictures up on the MySpace. That's myspace.com/DocYoung. And like I said, a clip here and there of little things that happen. We'll be putting those out on the website.
The picture of Doc and I. Doc is the handsome, dashing devil with the suit on and the dark hair, and I'm the ugly old guy.
Actually, when me and you took the picture, I had already changed, so I was wearing street clothes. And
okay.
I was disappointed that we only got one picture together the whole
time. Well, you know what? I was available to you, Doc.
Yeah, I was busy, and I really wish that I had more time to speak to you guys.
Right.
But
well, I do understand. You know, I had a kid say one time he thought I snubbed him, and I said, you know what? I have honestly walked past members of my family in the trying to organize a show and not acknowledged their presence simply because my mind was on 16 other things. So,
right.
So you don't have to apologize. I'm cool with it. I totally understand it. When I'm in my mode, you know, of doing getting a show ready, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's the paramount thing in my mind.
We're going to take a quick break, guys. When we come back, we've got James Dick. He's formerly James Dick of the WWE Tag Team.
Can we just call him Tank
Dicks?
Tolan?
Yes, and I was just about to say that, but he's now Tank Tolan. So Tank Tolan,
well,
coming
he was
up.
Tank Tolan before he was James Dick, too.
True.
Right. Okay, just establishing a beachhead here. That's
we're going to be back, guys. Tank Tolan coming up after this. Get your questions ready. You're listening to Doc Young and Les Thatcher.
Oh, before we go,
yes.
Before we go, let's say that starting, I guess, next week anyway, we're going to start getting Hot Topic back. We're trying to get James Gutman to join us there, and Brian Alvarez, of course, come back, and Irish Pete Doyle and so forth. And if we can drudge up the school teacher, Bruce Mitchell, him too. But we want to tell you that we intend to have those guys back so you won't have to listen to Les and Doc babble.
Yes. At least only, you know, at least you won't have to hear us babble for that long anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, Hot Topic coming back next week. We'll be back, though, right after this. Tank Tolan coming up. Stick around.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing, man? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
So many of these wrestling websites nowadays strongly promote their pay-per-view play-by-plays as if they were something unbelievably special. The problem is that they are not special. In fact, they're all the same. Nothing separates one from the other, and if you've seen one, you've seen them all. However, there is one site that has original play-by-play that's different from all the rest. 4WWrestling.com, a proud supporter of the Voice of Wrestling radio show, invite you to witness the ultimate play-by-play experience, live during every WWE pay-per-view. And if you're asking what makes them so different, well, 4W-Wrestling.com is the only site to put up pictures from the actual pay-per-view as it happens. You see what's taken place on the pay-per-view instead of just reading about it. If you're not buying a pay-per-view, but you're looking for the next best thing, 4W-Wrestling.com. Online wrestling evolved.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? do you absolutely have to know all about their history. You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Hi, my name is Adam Newdelman, but I play the Phantom on the radio. I'm here to remind you that, oh, screw that, my book, Mysteries of Wrestling South, is available at finer bookstores everywhere. That stupid fake voice, I hate it. I wrote a book along with Sir Adam Kleinberg called Mysteries of Wrestling. It has the questions that you wanted answered. Why does Steve Austin hate Jeff Jarrett? Are referees really blind and stupid and dumb? Who is actually the toughest wrestler in the business outside of the ring? Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kamala. We get down and dirty with insider facts you've never read about anywhere else. So what are you waiting for? It makes a great stocking stuffer. You're too short, you buy three of them, you get tall, you just stand on them. Mysteries of Wrestling Solved by ECW Press, written by Sir Adam Kleinberg and Adam the Phantom Newdelman. Available everywhere. It's done. The plug is done. I'm done. I didn't sell it well enough. There's naked pictures of China in there. Okay? Thank you.
Business Advances Web Hosting. With plans as low as $2.95 per month, you can get the professional web hosting solution that you need.
Visit www.businessadvances.com.
A total hosting solution at a fraction of the price.
Register today and we'll give you 100 free templates to get you started and even more freebies.
www.businessadvances.com. Simply business as usual.
It's like a pulse that refuses to die. After 4 years, the chants are as loud as ever. These three letters changed history.
This ain't WCW!
Revolutionized sports entertainment.
This ain't Monday Night Raw!
And brought the wrestling world to its knees.
Oh my God!
Tonight, the revolution is reborn. Welcome to the underground. Welcome to the cutting edge. Welcome to the extreme.
This, my friend, is ECW.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. On the line right now, our featured guest, Hank Tolan, from the world of WWE, formerly known as James Dick. Tank, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight.
Oh, no, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great. You know what? And we'll get past this, but when I heard they were changing your name and what they were changing it to, I said, okay, here's the beginning of the end. The Johnsons and the Flying Elvises and... No, you know, sadly, as goofy as it sounds, I mean, honestly, name plays a hell of an important part in our business, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. And you talking about how you saying that's the beginning of the end, I'm pretty sure that you're not the first person to have thought that. You know, I think there might have been one or two other people out there that thought that. You know, maybe a few thousands. But you know, what it comes down to, though. You know, I would have been more than happy to go up as what we were doing in OVW, but you know, you pretty much do what you're told. You know,
yeah,
it's Vince's,
exactly.
It's Vince's toy. He can play with it how he wants to.
Right.
You know, we're just his action figures, basically. You know.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it too. You're absolutely right. As a trainer, and having worked in the system, there's a frustrating thing too because. It's, you know, how you're used in OVW or HWA or Deep South or wherever should have play some semblance of the role of what you're going to be when you go up. But so often they take you 180 degrees in another direction and pay no attention to what the trainers that you've worked with have to say about it, which is really bad communication, if nothing else.
Well, you know, I mean, I really can't badmouth the WWE because I'm just so happy that they gave me the opportunity.
Sure.
But at the same time, I can say that, you know, when you're down in OVW and you're working on a certain character and trying to you know, bring that character out as best you can and manifest that, and then to go up there and have all of a sudden to say, well, you know, let's just totally, yeah, like you said, turn around 180 degrees and put you in a stripper's outfit, you know, it's tough. It's tough, you know. I'm not going to say it's not, but you make do with the best you can. You work with what you got, and you just try and give it your best shot. And, you know, that's basically what I did. But I would have sure have been a lot more comfortable being what I was already used to down in OVW.
Well,
which,
you know, I think, too, Tank, a lot of people don't understand that when you – well, it's like making the jumps to the big league in baseball or basketball or anything. You're going to be a bit nervous, a bit tense to begin with. And then they drop something on you that, in terms of your person as a persona, that you're not totally uncomfortable with. Maybe even if you like it, it's just something you've never done before. So it's a, you know, it's another thing you've got to pay attention to. Which to me, the point is to get you as relaxed as possible, opposed to adding more stress.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely agree with that. I mean, there's definitely going to be some nervous jitters. And some, you know, I guess, you know, trying to get in there and get comfortable with things. It's definitely an adaptation that you gotta make. And I think it's definitely the easiest when you could be as close to yourself or what you were used to doing as possible. And, you know, when it came down to all of a sudden saying, hey, you guys are going to be, you know, dancers, strippers, and I was like, wow, this is definitely going to be something new and challenging. Which, you know, I'm always up for a challenge.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, like you said, you're up there, it's the first time, and, like, you're expected to do something totally new and different when you're just trying to feel comfortable and fit in to begin with. It's definitely difficult. But, like I said, I'm always up for a challenge, and, you know, I was definitely up for just getting the opportunity, which was great. But, yeah, it's definitely a challenge. It's hard.
You know, I was looking at your profile today on Obsessed with Wrestling, and yeah. I know you started the Monster Factory, huh?
Yeah, I started Pretty Boy Larry Sharp's Monster Factory down in South Jersey, and it was just, you know, I'm actually really happy that I went to that school because, you know, there's so many people out there that try and train you, and they've done nothing in the business, they know nothing about the business, but yet they have no problem taking your money and showing you all the wrong ways to do things, you know?
Amen.
But luckily I went down to Larry Sharp's Monster Factory, and he was straight up front with me. He said, you know, you're getting in this, you should look at it like, you know, you're getting into it as a hobby because it's something you love, something you have a passion for, and take it as it's a hobby, something you're going to have fun with, and if anything comes of it, you know, it's great. But in the meantime, just try and learn as much as you can and just have fun with it because that's what it's about. And then, you know, if you want to stick with it long enough and try and progress and get out there, you know, best of luck, you know. But in the meanwhile, just take it as a hobby, and if anything comes of it, great.
Sure. Well, you know, with Larry, I know you got old school basics, which obviously were a plus for you when you went to OVW because Danny and Jimmy are all about the old school basics.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when, you know, basically the first thing we worked on was, you know, the chain wrestling, the learning how to call things on the fly, not pre-planning everything. We wouldn't be allowed to have a bunch of pre-planned phony matches, you know.
Right.
We had to go in there and work and call stuff in there, and it was good because, you know, you learn how to think in there, you know. You learn how to think, and you learn how to respond to each other and learn how to respond to a crowd. And, I mean, so it definitely was a help learning the basics and learning how to do it more the old school way, especially like you said, when I went to OVW and got the opportunity to be seen by them, you know, they were able to pick that out right away, and that's why I was lucky and blessed enough to be invited back to OVW and get thrown right into a, you know, being one of the top people was great.
Yeah, that's super. You teamed with Chris Cage for a while, and
yes.
I remember when he first showed up in OVW, well, him and Jeter, I guess, about the same time. And I always thought Chris had a future, and I know they released him. Can you shed a little light on that without burning any bridges or without, you know, putting anybody down? I mean, what was the deal?
Basically, you know, yeah, Chris Cage started around when Jeter did, and also Mark Magnus, who was Muhammad Hassan, And basically, you know, those guys came in not knowing one thing, you know, not never stepping a foot in the ring ever a day in their life. And like, yeah, they all had potential. They all did great. And Chris is definitely a talented guy. He's a very good friend of mine, one of my best friends here. And he's still around OVW, still helping out. He comes and helps out, help train with me. And you know, as far as it goes, though, I mean, the potential's there. And, you know, sometimes things don't work out. The timing's not there. And as far as, you know, him getting released and stuff like that, you know, I think that's kind of like, you know, it's not nothing because of his work or anything like that. You know, sometimes it's just the timing's not right. I don't want to really go into details.
Cool.
But you know, because you know he's a close friend and like you know I have respect for him and you know what's going on with him. But as far as it goes, there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to get another shot.
Good. Yeah, you know, he's now known as Chris Maddox, right?
Yeah, he also goes by Chris Maddox. And he's a hell of a guy and he's a hell of a worker and you know he's still getting better and you know like every day we're all learning we're all trying to get better and he's gonna get I know in my heart that he's just gonna definitely get re-signed and
I was just quizzical about that because I know he came up and worked some shows for me and you know I had a chance to work with him and he was just a quiet kid who seemed like he was like a sponge he wanted to learn and he wanted to get better but you know that's the other thing and I can say. And I'm not, it's not sour grapes for me either, but working in the developmental system, there's decisions made from the top that all those trainers scratch their heads and think, why? What are they doing this for? You know.
Bro, you're preaching to the choir, brother. I mean, I think we've all had questions as to why certain things happen, but, you know, in the end, we just got to say, you know, that's their decision, and that's the way it's going to go, and in the meantime, just roll with the punches, and, you know, try and do your thing, and just try and make things the best you can for yourself, you know?
Yeah, we were talking before we went on the air that you're now, Danny, and people don't know, if they don't know who Danny Davis is, the owner of OVW,
and it's not the Danny Davis that was the referee.
No, he's not a referee. This guy was a worker and a hell of a hand. Anyway, he's, trainer there now with the intermediates. These are the guys who don't have contracts. But what I was going to say is, I told you before we went on the air, I think that's a hell of an endorsement for you because Danny is very picky about things like that. But I also want to say that as young guys like you, who I'm going to feel comfortable when I go to that big ring in the sky, that we've less, you know, because as you may, without even being prompted, you mentioned there are guys that will take your money and don't have a clue what the hell they're trying to show you.
Yeah.
And the whole deal with guys like Danny and myself and Larry Sharp are trying to pass that on so that, you know, the business as what it's supposed to be and what it should be is still out there with the younger generation.
I mean, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's definitely spread thin as far as the you know, it getting passed on. You know, there's not as nearly as many great workers as there used to be, and that's why, you know, we're lucky to have the agents up in the WWE, like your Arn Andersons, your Ricky Steamboats, your Fit Finleys, Dean Malenko's, you know, I mean, Steve Kearns, you know, the list goes on and on.
Sure.
The guys that they have up there, I mean, it's great to have them because they're able to pass on the knowledge to us younger, as younger workers, and, you know, hopefully for us, it'll stick in our heads and we can learn from it and hopefully eventually down the line when we're like, you know, past our prime and we can hopefully pass it down to the next group. And like, that's why I really love, you know, the fact that Danny Davis had enough, you know, enough belief in me to make me a trainer there.
Right.
I mean, it's just fantastic. It's such a huge compliment coming from him. Cause like you said, he's a picky guy.
Yes,
you know,
he is.
and he's not afraid to speak his mind, and so when he's honest, he's frank and he's honest, and when he offered me the opportunity to help train, I mean it was just such a huge compliment, and definitely I definitely appreciate it, and I'm hopefully being able to as best I can take what I've learned from the people who have trained me up from the agents up in the WWE to Rip Rogers and Lance Storm and Al Snow. You know, everybody that I've learned from over the years, I'm hoping that I've been doing a good job with passing that down to the next group who will then, you know, move on to to better things, you know. And, cool. and I think it's great.
Talking about guys that speak their mind. For those who don't know, Rip Rogers tends to speak his mind.
Rip. No, he candy coats everything. Yeah. Yeah. He never tells you like it is. No.
He would never win the Mr. Congeniality
Award. No. But hey, you know what? I'd rather, you know, and when I was being trained by Rip, you know, I would rather someone chew my ass out and tell me the way it is and call me, you know,
whatever
name of the book he wants to call me at the time. You know, I'd rather have someone, you know, get on me and tell me what I'm doing wrong, tell me what I need to change, and then someone just sitting off to the side, either A, not paying attention, or B, just being like, yeah, that was great, kid. You know?
I agree. Oh, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, I love him. You know, a lot of people think I'm candid, and I bite pretty hard, and Danny and Jimmy too. But those are the people who never worked with Rip.
teachers,
for God's sake.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'll tell you what. I have my degree in teaching and stuff like that, and I'll tell you what. If I ever taught half as hard as Rip did in the classroom, then geez, I think most kids would be dropping out of school. But hey, you know what? You know, being said, you know, with Rip and Danny, how they're so upfront about things, you know, and Rip, you know, chewing your ass out sometimes. Hey, you know this, you know, there's the saying, this ain't ballet, and this, you know,
right.
This ain't for the lighthearted.
You're right.
You know,
it's not. Absolutely. How did you get hooked on this crazy business? I mean, were you just a fan from a young age or what?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to, you know, as you know, I'm from South Jersey, and I was lucky enough to basically grow up near the Spectrum, the Philadelphia Spectrum.
Right.
And you know, they used to have the old Spectrum Wrestling back in the day, and my dad would take me up to the Spectrum Wrestling, and I got to, you know, watch the show back then. And I was lucky enough that, you know, WrestleMania came around a few times to the Trump Plaza, you know, when I was a kid.
Sure.
And I got to sit there and watch the Mega Powers collide, Hulk Hogan versus the Macho Man, Randy Savage. And, you know, it was such a big deal to be able to see that up close and personal. I guess I at a young age got bit by that wrestling bug.
Right.
And, you know, of course, I had the younger brother that I'd always try and pull out the moves on. And every Saturday night, you know, my friends would come over and we'd watch Saturday night's main event and we'd be trying to kill each other. And you know, it just grew from there, you know. I mean,
right.
Like, we had, like, I think it was, like, the first or second WrestleMania, my friend had his father set up a little fake ring in the backyard, and, you know, we did matches, and I was Little John Studd, you know, so it was, you know, it was
cool.
Goofy stuff. Yeah,
I had an old, my parents got a new mattress for their bed, and I drug the old one up in the attic, and that was my first wrestling ring when I was about 9 years old.
Oh yeah. Oh gosh. I mean, I'm sure we all have our stories, you know.
Yeah. Well, but you know, that's the thing of it is, I think, well, you know, you like Jim Cornette, I knew him when before he ever got into business. And
yeah.
But I think that, you know, the guys that come up loving the business, and I sometimes when I say to kids, I'm still a fan, they look at me like, "Oh, no, you're," but it's true, you know. You still have your head in the business, and I think that's important.
Absolutely, I totally agree. I mean, to the day I die, I'm going to be a fan. That's just, you know, it's you know, there's something to be said about, you know, having the passion for this business and that love. You know, it's almost second to none, you know?
Right.
I mean, you just feel it, and it's one of those things that when you have it, that love and that passion, especially when you're doing it day in and day out, and you're still, all you're doing is thinking about it, whether you're, you know, throughout the whole day, and you're keeping yourself up at night thinking of different things and promos and everything, you know, thinking about different things you could have done in the match, or, you know, just picking things apart, or watching tape and studying tape, old school tapes and new school tapes, and critiquing yourself all the time. I mean, it's important that you always not just wrestle, but you stay a fan.
You're right. You mentioned you had your teaching degree. Where'd you go to college?
I actually went to a college. It's actually a teaching college right outside of Philadelphia called Westchester University, and I actually got my degree in exercise physiology, kinesiology, and teaching. So a couple different degrees. But,
so you've definitely got something to fall back on if you ever decide to step
away. Oh, absolutely. But you know, I'm not anywhere near being done yet. I'm having way too much fun with this. You know,
right.
I'm gonna try and do it as long as my body will let me. you know?
I had a question for you. When you guys first came onto SmackDown, for a couple weeks, you guys were known, you and Chad were known as the Tolans.
Yes.
And I believe it was maybe two and a half weeks later, they decided to change it to the Dicks. Did they ever give you a reason why, or did they just say, well, we're going this way now?
You know, sometimes there is no rhyme or reason to what happens,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, basically I guess what happened was they had us coming in. Originally they were going to have us come in and be like Simon Dean's henchmen, which eventually down the line became the, Geminis.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, they saw us that night and they said, you know, we're going to put these guys on their own and see how they do. And they came up with us, you know, coming out from the crowd and attacking LOD and then whoever else had the Mexicals and whoever else was in the ring. And what happened from there is we were coming out in we just came out in black slacks and black tank tops. And they were calling us the Tolans, but then... one of the main people there, I'm not going to say names, but, you know, one of the main people there said, hey, it would be a great idea if we had these guys be strippers. And so then next thing you know, we were being talked to about, hey, we want to make you guys strippers and you guys come out, rip off your pants and dance and stuff like that. And, you know, I thought, hey, you know, whatever you guys want to do with me, I'm up for it.
Right.
I'm going to try and make the best I can. My only concern was that it was similar to the Heartthrobs.
Right.
Because they already came out dancing and tearing off their pants on Raw.
That was my next question.
Yeah, well, basically that was also one of my concerns. And, you know, we'll get that in a second, though, if you have a question about it. But when it came down to the Dicks, yeah, they're calling us Tolans for a couple weeks. And then, you know, they said, hey, well, why don't you guys come up with a team name? So I was like, all right, we'll come up with some kind of team name and stuff. And I was picking my brain for a week. And so the next week I could have a bunch of names to present to them. And I presented the names to them, and then they go, well, we want to go with whatever feels most comfortable for you. I said, okay, well, I feel most comfortable with this name. And then out of the corner of my ear I hear, what if we call them the Swingin' Richards?
Oh, my God. What were the names you came up with? Do you remember?
Let's see. One of them was... oh gosh, I'd have to think for a minute, but the Bod Squad, BOD, the Bod Squad, and then I think there was a couple others. I can't remember. There was a couple others that I felt comfortable with, but you know, the Bod Squad. Actually, Simon Dean helped come up with that one, but you know, I can't remember the other ones. But because I'll tell you why, because the shock of hearing that other one, I think totally knocked out everything else. But all of a sudden, so all of a sudden, one of the agents goes, hey, how about we call him the Swinging Richards? And then, you know, that guy, and then so a couple people popped on that, and then next thing you know, I think I'm going to go to Vince with that one, see what he thinks. And I'm like, oh, God, please don't go to Vince.
Oh,
now.
My God.
And then so basically within the course of an hour, it went from the Swinging Richards to the Swinging Dicks and then to just the Dicks. So,
I don't know which one's worse.
well, you know, they might have gone with the Swinging Richards, but then they said that was too close to Stevie Richards. So I was like, all right.
Okay, that was the reasoning why, you know.
Yeah, right. So, pretty crazy. But anyway, so basically what ended up happening was about an hour before the show, I'm just warming up and getting ready, and I hear someone comes over to me and says, well, you guys are going to be the Dicks. And I was like, okay, fabulous.
Yeah.
And I smiled. I just said, hey, I said to myself, you know, might not be my number one choice in names, but I'm going to see what I can do with it. You know, I'm going to try and make the best. Because, you know, you don't know how many shots you get up there in WWE, and you know, you got to try and just
gotta go
do the
with
best.
It.
Yeah, you got to try and just do the best you can with what you got, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
you couldn't have said any, but you're absolutely right. And that's what I tell kids. I said, listen, when the door comes open, you got to kick it down, and whatever they offer you. Like I said, a guy said to me one time, he said, you know, what's the best advice you can give me? And I said, well, if they ask you to put a midget over in 5 minutes, tell them you can get it done in 4.
Exactly right, and then during that match, you're going to try and get both of yourselves over as much as you can. Sure.
Yeah, and there, no matter what the gimmick is, there's always a chance. The Undertaker's the corniest gimmick ever, but he's a legend, you know.
I mean, it comes down to, you know, what you do with it, and you try and do the best. I mean, of course, there's different things, variables that are going to come into play, like, you know, how long they're going to try and ride with it, how much they're going to try and let it stick to the wall. Give it a shot, let it ride it out. You know, sometimes some gimmicks take time to build, and some gimmicks you can't get over with just wrestling. You need a lot of vignettes and promos. You know, I think it might have. There's two things I think that could have helped our gimmick get over more, and one was two out of the two. I'd say one of the main factors being that instead of having as many matches, I think we could have done some more promo work. I would have rather had a 1 or 2 minute promo in the back getting our characters over instead of a 5 or 6 minute match against somebody, because, you know, sometimes you gotta really get the character in the people's mind
right.
for them to take you in, you know, instead of going out there, because you can get character over in a match, but it's hard when you have a 6 minute match including entrances,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, basically, and the second factor being, I was just really worried about being called the dicks when we were on network television instead of cable. You know, because it's really hard. You can't be as risque. You can't really push it to the limit like I wanted to.
Right.
That was one of my main concerns, and I actually had a talk with one of the writers and producers about that. And I was like, you know, I know you guys want us to be more edgy and everything like that, but you know, I'm worried about it because this is right after we got one of our promos cut. You know, we had to reshoot the promo because it went to the truck, and Vince loved it, and you know, we got really positive feedback. But when it went to the editing truck, they said that's not going to be able to air on TV. You got to reshoot it. And I was like, man, we're not going to be able to really push this thing like it should. You're mm-hmm. not going to get the most out of the dicks as I think is going to be possible. So that kind of worried me. I think it could have been done a little bit better, a little bit more risque if it had been on. Like Raw, where you know, cable show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and the other thing, had they have left you as just the Tolans, then basically the limitations weren't any. I mean,
right,
you
exactly.
know, you could have expanded your heel persona or babyface if they wanted you to be to virtually anywhere you wanted to go. But you're right, the name. Tied you down and limited to what you were able to do.
Right.
Yeah.
A couple quick questions from the chat room before we get out of here. Old School wants to know, how do you react when fans say wrestling is phony or fake?
Well, I say you should try stepping in the ring and seeing for yourself how phony or fake it is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously nowadays, you know, WWE is like, hey, look, it's sports entertainment, you know, and they talk about it being predetermined and everything like that, and, you know, they talk about being fixed. Well, you know, they're not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes anymore, per se.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think there's definitely a big difference between something being fixed and something being phony.
Right.
You know, definitely. I mean, tell me it's phony when, you know, I've had surgery for torn biceps. I've torn every ligament there is to tear my knee. And, you know, I've gotten beat up on a daily basis. You're going to have a hard time convincing me that it's fake. And I think if someone wants to say that and they will ever want to try and step foot in the ring, they're going to see differently.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So
you know,
I'm just laugh at those type of people because they think they know, they don't know. They're smart marks.
Yeah. Well, you know, my standard answer for that is I said, look, to me, fake means nobody gets hurt, and my body would tell you that what I do is not fake.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
RVD fan, says, did you ever think or were you ever told that you were too short to be a wrestler?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's no secret. I'm not the tallest guy in the business. But, you know, when I was getting into this, you know, I don't know how many friends and family told me, hey, look, don't you think you might be a little short for this? You might be a little small, whatever. And, you know, I've always used all that, you know, but I've been told that my whole life, you know, when it came to sports and everything else. But it never stopped me in anything else I've ever done. It never stopped me in football, never stopped me in wrestling, never stopped me, and it never will. You know, I'm never going to – I always use that kind of stuff to my advantage, to prove people wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you never say never in this business, you know.
Absolutely. Tank, you've been a great guest. I want to thank you for being on. Catch him, guys. OVW, Tank Tolan is back in OVW. And do you have a website?
Yeah, actually I do. I'm at tanktolan.com, as well as I have a MySpace page, so if you want to catch me on MySpace, I'm there as well. So you can look me up, and I'm more than happy to answer any fans' questions on either by email at tanktolan@aol.com or on MySpace.
Excellent. Tank, I want to thank you once again for being on. Les, we got to run. We're up against the wall here.
Okay. Tank,
ECW is coming
on. I hope to see you. I plan on coming down and visiting and checking things out in OVW in the next few weeks, so maybe we'll hook up.
Absolutely. It would be a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks for coming on the show. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Fantastic.
Guys, we're going to get out of here. Enjoy ECW. We're going to get out of here next week. Our special guest is going to be former WCW wrestler Scotty Riggs. So stick around for that, or come back for that, actually, next Tuesday, 8 p.m. Les, time to say goodnight, my friend.
Goodnight, my friend.
Now get the guns, the drugs, from my generation. I'll take the fall, the state, and across the nation, and it's a...